Off the Ball Rugby.
Conan's going to come in and there's a very good chance now starting for the Lions. Yes, he's an absolute talisman. He's been the most in-form number 8 for a good while now in the world.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Word on the Street, where every week we take a trending sporting topic, a sporting event that's dominating the headlines, and we take it to the public and find out what they think. So this is episode 5, So Long Sevens. Eve, Rachel, how are we?
Good, how are you? Bit nervous now today, to be honest, Susanna.
Why?
We've got the big Camogie Congress vote this evening, so... Yeah, I still think it's going to be a yes that they're going to be able to wear the shorts or skirt choice coming up. But, you know, never say never until the vote actually goes through.
Is there any part of you that thinks it's not going to go through?
A very, very small sadistic part, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you can ever be fully confident in anything, but listen, fingers crossed. And so while Rachel's in this state of kind of nervousness, I got to say, Susanna, I've never been happier in my life.
I can see you're wearing the scarf.
My Tottenham scarf. Europa League winners over Manchester United last night in Bilbao. I don't want to be dramatic, but it was the best day of my life. So
that video you showed of... you've like recorded the last couple of seconds and
yeah.
The hug with your dad was the cutest thing I've ever seen.
I went absolutely mental. And I mean, my dad didn't speak the entire kind of day leading up to the final. He was that nervous. He couldn't even talk about it or think about it. And then the second the final whistle blew, it just, yeah, bedlam, mayhem. It was the best atmosphere. Incredible. So, I feel like we're in very contrasting emotions here, Rachel, but hopefully you'll get that sense of kind of justice and euphoria.
Yeah, I think I'll be feeling good tomorrow morning at breakfast.
Here's hoping.
Here's hoping indeed. Diving into this week's topic, I don't know how much you guys knew about the Sevens maybe before this all kicked off. Obviously, I have quite a personal link to it. So it was a crazy week in my family. But will I take us through a little bit of what happened?
Yeah, I'd like some background context because as you kind of said, you have a personal connection. I don't.
So. Yeah, I would have known a small bit about it. My dad's a big rugby sevens fan.
But, really?
Yeah. So I don't know. I wouldn't have known too much, but I would have watched a couple of tournaments against my will over the years.
my rugby sevens knowledge kind of begins and ends with Ilona Maher, the American.
She's class.
She's incredible.
Yeah.
So yeah, please take it away, Susanna.
Yeah, so basically we'll start with World Rugby. About 18 months ago, Sevens is a format of the game which is played with 14 players on the pitch. So normally you have 30 players, 15 on each side. Sevens, you have 15, there's 7 a side, and it only lasts for 14 minutes. So you have 7-minute halves. So it's a quicker version of the game. It's played all over the world. They travel around to tournaments. They have tournaments maybe every month or so, and they have a really long season. But basically, 18 months ago, they cut the World Series, so the World Program, from, I think it was 16 teams to 12 teams. So that was already the start of a bit of question marks around the Sevens. And then they had the Olympics last year, which was obviously massive. So many people started watching it through that. But then weirdly, it almost went down ever since. And there was murmurings kind of in the IRFU. They weren't putting as much, I don't want to start with money, but they weren't putting as much effort into it. The players were really struggling. They weren't getting 10 players left after the Olympics. Just that's how the cycle goes. Things change. 10 players left. They didn't get any new players or barely any. So they were really struggling. And then on the World Series side of it, at the end of this year, they cut it again. So they barely gave it a year to even trial the 12-team system. And they cut it from 12 to, I think it's 8 who are on the top of the World Series now. And through a combination of factors of, you know, as I said, they weren't in Ireland, they weren't putting a lot into the Sevens. So the team wasn't performing as well as they did last year. Last year, they were second on the World Series, which was insane. And they went into the Olympics as medal contenders. Like a lot of people thought that Ireland had not only a chance of winning a medal, but potentially winning the whole thing, winning gold, which would have been insane for our country to have well, 14 gold medalists. Like, we barely had 14 Olympians a couple of years ago. So that would have been crazy. But through a combination of them not investing in the sevens program in Ireland, not introducing those new players, not building it back up, but also on the world rugby side, there being question marks and the cutting of the teams, Ireland have now dropped out of the top two ranks of the World Series completely. So they're now back in the third level, which is basically where you compete at your regional games. So you go to European competitions, and if you win them, you then have a chance of coming out and re-qualifying for Division 2 and then hopefully Division 1. So it's a long old slog to get back up there. So in the wake of all that, kind of out of the blue, I mean, you'll be able to tell us a bit more about this with your experience at the Sport Ireland event, but kind of out of the blue, the IRFU announced, actually, no, we're cutting the men's sevens programme.
Yeah, that was crazy. So last week I was at a Sport Ireland event centred around Olympics and the Olympians that we're sending to LA 2026. Billy Dardis, former captain of the world, or the Irish sevens team, was there, and in a completely separate capacity to rugby. One of the other journalists that was there just asked him a question about the sevens and how it seemed to be declining, like you said. And he came out with a statement saying that the programme was going to be cut and that all the lads were going to find out on Monday that there wasn't going to be a team anymore and that they were all out looking for jobs. It's when you heard that statement, that's when it resonated. Like, to us, it's fans. Like, all the sport is going to be cancelled. That's awful. But these guys are out here looking for jobs. And, you know, obviously, Susanna, you've got a personal skin in the game, this with your brother being on the team. Yeah. So, you know, you'll be able to tell us all about that and how he's coping with that news.
Yeah, I mean, it was mental. Like, he, not that he didn't see it coming, because everyone keeps saying, you know, we did see it coming. The whole year they've been not investing. I've heard things of, you know, they sent 13 players, which is the number of players you get to a tournament, but one of them was already injured. So they could barely even compete starting out. So all year it's kind of been coming, but he would say, hand on heart, he didn't know it was going to happen like that. And he didn't know they were going to cut it completely. They just had an idea that something was going to change. So he was playing golf with Dylan O'Grady, who's been a superstar on the series this year for Ireland. And they just get a call from Humphreys. They kind of had an inkling about what was happening with Billy, who, by the way, apparently he was just asked his thoughts on the whole situation. He just said, I think this is what's going to happen. And people are saying he's been attacked from within the IRFU. People are using the word scapegoated, that he was getting all sorts of hate about how he broke this news, when actually, Brian said, my own brother said, if any of us had been asked the question, we would have said the exact same. We had no idea what was going on. This was just from what had been happening all year, what we thought would happen. And the IRFU tried to blame Billy for why they had to rush out the news, when in reality, they just, I personally think they just hadn't planned it. But anyway, he was on the golf course, gets a call from Humphreys, the performance director of the IRFU. He actually declined it because I think he was just...
It's bad golf etiquette to answer the phone on the golf course anyway, just as a golfer, I'll have to say that.
So. Are you a golfer?
A little bit.
I didn't know that. But maybe that's why. I don't think that was why. I think there was anger in there. I think there was frustration. He's been the captain this year, so it's been especially hard for him. And maybe a bit of, he didn't want to accept it quite yet, didn't want to deal with it. It was a later problem.
Because it's so drastic. Because as you said, Rachel, maybe for fans, we get one less tournament to watch or one less, you know, thing that we can kind of view for fun. But this is people's livelihoods. Mm. Like, this is a really emotional and very human issue. And when you have, you know, professional players, not only, you know, are these people who are maybe working other jobs as well to kind of supplement income, and who are also training incredibly hard, and to be treated in that way, it kind of leaves a really bitter, sour taste in your mouth. It doesn't feel good.
Especially when they were paid so little.
Yeah.
You know, even I don't think he'll mind me saying this, my brother wasn't on the top sevens contractor you can be on. So he was getting less than even the 30 grand that's being floated around. I'm not sure what he was on exactly, but that means he had two other coaching jobs just to get by. Now they cut one. Now the latest has been that they'll pay out. The IRFU have said they'll pay their kind of salaries until the end of the year, so giving them a bit of time to kind of find new jobs and do that whole thing. But apart from that, they were never in this for the money, and it's kind of going to lead us into our whole next point about the finances and the IRFU. But they were just treated so badly after giving so much to the game. For my brother, for 7 years, he's given everything to Sevens. He's been to two World Cups for Ireland. He's been to two Olympics. He is a double Olympian. And to be just thrown to the wayside like that, as you said, it left a bitter taste in my mouth, in my family's mouth. And I said to him last week, he was so calm when he was on off the ball, and he was very collected, and he was very... didn't go too far either way. And I said to him, I don't know how you did that. I would have been shouting from the rooftops if I was you in that studio. But I'm getting my chance now. But will we dive right into why they said they cut it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So one of the main reasons is they say the move is part... This is from the IRFU statement, by the way, that came out on Wednesday. I think it was a Wednesday.
It was Wednesday evening, late, like last week.
Yeah. So May 14th.
Conveniently, kind of just before the 6 o'clock news.
Yeah, we were saying that, weren't we, on the day?
Sneaky.
Very, very suspicious. But they said, in a quote, the move is part of a broader strategic effort to ensure long-term financial sustainability and focus on key initiatives outlined in the union's strategic plan. So the financial sustainability thing is what a lot of people have been questioning.
And I had a long read today of the 2023-2024 financial statement from the IRFU. And they mentioned a few kind of interesting, I suppose, things. Like, they are in an 18.4 million euro deficit. Okay, so that doesn't sound great. But at the same time, they say in their statement that if, over the next 10 years, they are not projected to go into any kind of debt. So it's not like they're in dire straits. And, you know, the reason they cited, as you just said, for cutting the men's sevens is financial, is to kind of try and claw back some of that deficit. And yet the men's sevens last year, it cost them, I think, 4.2 million euro.
And this is in an Olympic year.
An Olympic
year. This is the major issue that everyone keeps talking about. And Harry's been on, he was on off the ball, but he's also been all over the place. He's been fantastic talking about this. Harry McNulty, the former captain, Terry Kennedy was talking about it. This cost over 4 million euro in an Olympic year, which is the equivalent of a World Cup year for the 15s, which is what I think put them in debt in the first place.
Yeah, they said that the main reason that they have this deficit, and they are very kind of conscious to say not debt, but a deficit, was due to the Rugby World Cup, and then they, to the 2023 Rugby World Cup. And then they also said, we know that we're not the only union that's been affected by this. And yet you're the only one kind of in the past few weeks to cut their sevens program in this way. So it doesn't seem, you can understand why people are so angry about it. But kind of going back to your point, Susanna, about, you know, it's an Olympic year, that's why it's more expensive. It's only, the increase in cost was only 400,000 euro for an Olympic year. So it's not like it's this huge kind of, oh my God, it's an Olympic year. We have to spend so much more money. This can't possibly be feasible. Compare that to what they're spending on central contracts. Compare that to what the IRFU is spending on the Rugby World Cups, on all of these other events that they host and hold and attend and play in.
Yeah, and attend not just as players, but as they're sending officials. What's your lovely term for them? Alakadoos.
We have... I'm not the only one who uses that. Fun facts. So all week I've been calling them the Alakadoos, the men in the suits, the guys who go to committee. I think if you're a rugby fan, you must know this word, because I don't think I've made it up. But Rachel and Eve all week were like, what the heck is an Alakadoo?
Yeah, I thought you were singing a song at first, like Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo from Cinderella.
That song from Cinderella, that's been stuck in my head all day. But Heather Lynn Clark on Instagram, I have to give you a shout out because... this is my own fault. We tried it for the first time this week. We wanted you to get in touch if you were outside Dublin and we couldn't find you on Grafton Street, basically. So we put up a box on our Instagram stories saying, answer here, give us your thoughts on the men's sevens. Now, what I didn't know is that you can only reply with something like 6 or 7 words. So I went to test it, or I think my mum went to reply or something, and she was like, well, I can't even write a full sentence, so I'm not going to bother. So if anyone else had that problem, I'm sorry. But Heather Lynn Clark, shout out to you. You beat the odds, and you, instead of letting that beat you, you just replied 11 times. And you got everything you had to say all in the end. And Eva, are you going to read it out?
I'll read out a few of my favourite ones, starting with the Alakadoos. She says, IRFU should be made to be transparent how much money being spent on Alakadoo trips, which is kind of exactly what we want to know. And, very short-sighted, she says. They clearly do not see the sevens as a sport in its own right, attracting people to rugby. Now, the sport in its own right is a kind of a weird one. I'm not entirely, as someone who's not maybe a huge fan of rugby, or I've never played it, I can't really speak on that with any sort of authority or confidence. But the kind of attracting people to rugby bit, I think, is the major thing here.
Yeah, but even on the transparency, I think that's been a major issue. I listened to Jerry talk about it yesterday on Wednesday Night Rugby as well. Everyone's just angry that the IRFU aren't being transparent. Yeah. And it's all, so these figures are, I think they come from a reliable source. I've heard they do, but obviously it's very hard to say because the IRFU are meant to be a trusted, reliable source as well. So we can't say for sure. But these figures, Harry McNulty was quoting them last week. And he says, firstly, in a non-Olympic year, the program actually only costs 1.35 million to fund the whole men's sevens program. So their over 4 million figure is strange to start with, let's say the least. Then he says 900,000 euro of that comes from outside investment. So 300,000 from World Rugby, 300,000 from the Olympic Federation of Ireland, because it's an Olympic sport, and slightly over 300,000 from private investment. So that's your likes of Triton Lake, who are their main sponsor, David Barry, who I'm sure people have heard of with the whole Facebook, and David Nusafora commenting. I'm sure we'll get to that. But that leaves around 450,000 euro to cover the entire men's sevens program, which is roughly the same as one centrally contracted player. Now, this is completely at odds to what the IRFU are saying. And I think that's where people are getting so annoyed, is that you're saying one thing and you're saying you've done this whole review, but you won't show us the review. And people are coming out with facts and figures that don't match up with this. And yet you're sitting there silently and you're not giving us any evidence to suggest that we should believe you.
Yeah, it's almost insulting, really, isn't it?
Mm.
It's always an easy one to use when you're cutting a program, something like debt or money. And because they have that figure of the deficit, it's easy for them to use that and say, oh, people won't care about the sevens. They won't look any further into this.
Mm.
It's an insult to the players, I think, just to cite that as one of the reasons. I think a lot of the public agreed with us there as well. You know, they thought that the way the players were treated and how they found out about it was absolutely disgraceful.
Yeah, let's listen to that, actually, because they were comparing it to other sports as well, which was really interesting.
I think it's disgraceful. It's the future of rugby. I know there's not a pathway in the men's game as much as in the women's game, through the sevens getting into the 15. But it gets young people interested in playing the game, and clubs around the country that are small, that can't field 15s, it's a pathway or something for them to look forward to and try and achieve. And certainly in the smaller clubs, that wouldn't be rugby heartlands. The way they did it is disgraceful. No respect for the players. Obviously, they have their favourites with Leinster and Munster. Everyone else seems to get left behind. And then, yeah, I think it's just the way they handled it was dreadful. And in any other sport, there would be outrage. What's the chap's name? Harry?
Yeah, Harry McNulty.
Yeah, his pod, or his TikTok, YouTube thing. Yeah, I think that people who weren't even connected with rugby, that didn't all seen it, all thought, well, this is disgraceful. And he came across very well. He's a nice fella, very likeable character, certainly a talented player who knew that sevens was his pathway and he was never going to play 15s at that level. So, yeah, I just think they didn't expect the backlash. I think they were going to try and do it under the radar and it would go unnoticed.
What would you like to see them do, I suppose, the IRFU?
Well, they're just as bad as the FAI, aren't they? They don't, you know, if it's not positive, they're not saying it. Do you want to go on about the GA and the women's camogie shorts? Or?
that was last week's fun.
Yeah, but none of them will have any respect for any of the players. They're treated like cattle, you know what I mean? And if it wasn't for them, at any age level, from professional to kids, they wouldn't have anything or jobs, and they've no respect for people.
Yeah, strong stuff, wasn't it?
Incredible. Yeah. I loved how he compared it to the League of Ireland
and the
camogie. You know, it's just like...
The League of Ireland as well, that was especially, I think, that makes sense to compare those. I mean, you look at what, you know, soccer in the Republic of Ireland right now, and we're really focusing on trying to get the League of Ireland built up, and that involves so many people on a grassroots level, and it really does feel like, maybe not now, but certainly in the past, people high up in the FAI kind of didn't help the league and the look of the league and the international reputation of the league. And this cutting of the sevens is doing nothing to help the international reputation of the IRFU.
No, and interestingly, it's had international reach, which was crazy because I suppose I'm so invested in the sevens because I've been following my brother around the world for 7 years, which has been fantastic. RIP those holidays. But I didn't expect other people to care all that much.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think as well because World Rugby made those changes, are other countries a bit more alert and a bit nervous about their own programs?
Yeah.
So this isn't, it's isolated to Ireland right now, but maybe in the future it's not going to be, because if other countries have been relegated to that second or third tier, are they also nervous that it could be coming down for the line for them? Like, is sevens as an entire sport in jeopardy now thanks to these rules? Are a lot of other countries going to start pulling out?
But as well, I mean, when you, if you're a maybe a smaller rugby nation, or maybe certainly a nation that doesn't have the money that the IRFU would have, seeing a country like Ireland with such a huge history with rugby and huge success with rugby pulling their sevens program completely for the men, I mean, it's not a good look, even on an international scale. You know, playing less rugby surely isn't good for the sport as a whole on this island.
Yeah, and what you were saying, they have, a lot of people have said, a lot of the comments were, okay, look, Ireland have gone this way, who's next? What country is going to be the next victim of the of world rugby changing the system? So I think this issue is at two levels. It's a world rugby issue. They haven't made it easy for the IRFU, but then the IRFU, the way they went about it, was that was their own issue, and they could have done so much better, especially in the transparency. I think I want to read out Angus's message he wrote to us on X, and he said, "It's a pity to see it gone, but the relegation of a team from the World Series was a killer blow to a strain of the sport that people are not really interested in. No obvious pathway in it, no obvious pathway in it either for it to pass to 15s, Keenan aside." Now, I think he does have some points. The relegation from the World Series was a killer blow. And what's important to remember is that, as I said, €300,000 of the funding came from World Rugby. This will be gone because Ireland are no longer on that Division 1 or Division 2. So I can see why the IRFU took that and thought, okay, well, that's, we're going to have to cover those costs. Now, you could say the costs are going to be less because, you know, they're only flying to Berlin or Amsterdam or wherever the European competition is. But I take his point. To a sport that people are not really interested in, I think our whole pod and the whole reaction to this has maybe proven that wrong a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big rugby fan, but like I said, my dad was a rugby sevens fan and I got into it because of him. I wouldn't have seen much of it before, but it's a great sport. And like the tours that go around, I'd say if there's an Irish person living in Perth that hasn't attended the rugby sevens, I'd be impressed.
Yeah.
You know, it brings people together, a lot of expats. You know, it's in a lot of countries where you'd have a lot of Irish expats as well. Brings them together. And the Olympics, when we spoke to people on the street today, it's one of the first things a lot of people said was, yeah, I wouldn't have followed a lot of it, but then we had the Olympics, you know.
Well, certainly that was my kind of exposure to rugby sevens. And I loved it. I like how short and snappy it is. I like that it's more, you know, it's exciting, it's high scoring. It's, you know, for someone who's not a rugby fan, I mean, I get into when Ireland or what are playing and I get really into that. But that's kind of just a national thing. But in terms of watching, if I was sit down and watch a game, I loved watching the Olympics. And even though we didn't, you know, end up scoring a medal, it still felt like it's an avenue that is important in getting kind of your casual rugby fan interested. And for people who want to play, it's a lot more accessible, perhaps.
Yeah, a lot of people were saying that. And we've talked about that a lot, about the casual rugby fan and how sevens is maybe more exciting to watch. It's that little bit quicker. You don't have to put aside 80 minutes of your day and you don't have to understand. You have to understand the rules, but they're not applied in the same way. It's potentially not as complicated to watch. And that whole thing about expats, I think that's been key in this whole argument, is that sevens had a marketability that 15s could never reach. The expats, and there's loads of them living in Singapore, in Dubai, in Perth, as you said, all over the world, in places that the 15s never ever go. I saw a TikTok the other day, which was this lad, and I'm not sure where he lived. I think it was either Dubai or Singapore, because in the background of all his photos, there was loads of skyscrapers. But he's an Irish kid. He's lived abroad all his life. And he's now maybe 17 or 18. He actually has a big following. I've forgotten his name. We'll find it later. But he had like 40,000 followers on TikTok. And he does rugby content. And he said, "My whole life, the sevens was the only way for me to watch Irish rugby. The only chance I got to see the men in green performing, and my only way of connecting with home and rugby in a way." And that kind of hit a note with me, because it's true. If you're an expat, like I grew up abroad myself, I only moved to Ireland when I was 18, and you don't have that connection. So sevens has brought a whole different factor that 15s can't really do. And it is much more approachable.
Yeah, and not just for spectators, but for players. I mean, you take a look at some of the like top-ranked teams in rugby sevens. Obviously, you've got a lot of the rugby nations there. You've got the likes of Kenya, Spain, Brazil. You'd never associate any of those as rugby countries, but they're in the top, you know, tens in some of the men's and women's sides. And for players as well. You see this especially in the women's team, the crossover between the Gaelic football as well. I mean, you hear Anna Galvin from Kerry speak about going playing sevens because she had all the skills from Gaelic football. Mm. Hannah Tyrrell, Stacey Flood, they all played inter-county. So it's a great pathway to have a crossover between sports as well.
And there was someone, Vicky
Wall.
Yeah, she didn't play rugby at all or something. And then suddenly she was almost, I don't know if she went to the Olympics in the end or if she was right on the cusp.
Yeah, I think she just missed off on the cusp. And it's because it's accessible. Yeah, it's a really tough sport to play. But you see it in the way rugby seven started in Ireland back in 2015. You know, when Nicofora came over, they held open trials, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, you'd never hear of that for a lot of sports. And one of the people to attend those open trials, Tyke Byrne.
I know. Matt.
News to me today.
That was news to me as well. And that's part of the whole, you know, as Angus here said, sorry, I feel like we're biting at you a bit, Angus, but we're offering counter arguments. But he said, you know, no obvious pathway in it either for it to pass to the 15s, Keenan aside. I personally do not think that's true. I think we forget about a lot of the people who went through sevens. Tyke Byrne. Key example. Nobody would ever associate him with the sevens, but it played a part in his career and it played a part in getting him to where he is today, which is now a British and Irish Lion. Same as Hugo Keenan. Like, he will be a British and Irish Lion. And Keenan especially, this is the case for so many lads who go through the sevens. They are let go from their province. This is what's mental. He was in the Leinster Academy. He was let go. Yes, maybe he could have gone to Connacht or Munster or Ulster, but there's no saying that he would have made it and he would have been picked back up. He got a chance in the sevens. He performed exceptionally. And now look at him. It's had a huge impact, firstly, on his skills for the 15s game, which a lot of people say, like Antoine Dupont, he is the best player in the world. He probably was before he went to sevens. I think he's the best player in the world. Some people would argue with me. But he has actually, people have looked at his stats since he played in the Olympics. He has become a better player because of the skills that he gained within the sevens. And you forget that so many people have passed through, picked up these skills, whether it be their speed, their passing, their one-on-one defense, because it's so isolated in sevens that you have to be at the top of your game in all of these factors. And they've brought it back and become the 15s players they are today. And now, of course, they're only remembered for that. But I just really do think people forget the amount of people who pass through there.
And what's crazy is that I think when we no longer have this, you know, if we've gotten rid of sevens completely, are we going to lose? How many players that get dropped from their provinces won't have a pathway now to get back? And we've seen other countries that have maybe dropped their sevens programs and it has affected them, or people within the rugby world in that country think it has affected them.
Yeah, let's play that clip, because we were chatting to a guy who was from Wales and he was talking about how he didn't actually know this had happened in Ireland, but he was so upset about it because it had happened in his country.
We're getting the public opinion on the IRFU axing the men's seven programme last week. You said you didn't know too much about that, but a similar thing happened in Wales?
Correct, yeah. It was several years ago and it's had a big effect. You can see the mess Welsh rugby's in now. They're messing around with the regions the same as they did in Scotland, and the RFU's got to get a hold of it. The Irish RFU's got to get a hold of it. It's just chaos everywhere. It's a stepping stone to the 15s. It's a projection through. You know, the progression is very, very difficult now unless you're loaded. And it's, you know, the grassroots is getting left behind for the sake of professionalism.
Do you think the sevens helps more people participate in the game?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Why is that?
It's just because it's more accessible. You don't have to be a great 15s player to play sevens. And it's a good stepping stone coming through. It gets more people interested. It's a quicker competition.
So he was talking about how it's not only getting more people interested, but it's also, as we were talking about, that development platform to come through to the 15s game. Now, what's really bizarre is the IRFU kept, when they cut the men's program, they kept the women's, because they said, I don't know what they said exactly, but they said from a comprehensive review, again, that word review is being thrown around a lot. They said, oh, the men's program doesn't, it doesn't deliver, it doesn't produce what we need for the 15s, but the women's does. I'm stuck on this one. I have spent a lot of my adult life playing women's rugby and fighting for women to get the same as men in rugby. And it's been so difficult, even when I was in college, you know, all we wanted was to be treated the same. But never, ever did we want what the men didn't have. And I never wanted one program to succeed at the downfall of the other. And that's what this feels like. And it doesn't feel good.
No, it feels patronising. Mm. I'm going to quote just quickly from the IRFU's website. They said that it's important to note that the Women's Sevens programme remains a critical part of our development strategy for Women's 15s rugby. But that's the exact same for the men.
Yeah,
that's the exact same process that we've seen happening. And to, yeah, it doesn't feel great, doesn't look great, because it's not equal.
Yeah.
Anymore. Like, even though it would be worse if they cut both programs, I guess, it just doesn't sit right.
And it would be outrageous if they did this the other way around.
It'd
be international news.
It'd be uproar.
Yeah. And also interesting is Heather again, and I think you were talking about this, Rachel. She said, horrendous decision, and although they say the women's sevens is continuing, it really isn't. They pulled the under 18 women's sevens from going to Europe to compete. Women's sevens being rolled into 15s, no separate training or coaching except the odd camp. Writing was on the wall from the beginning of the year. Teams were set up to fail. So we touched on that from the beginning with the men's. But I think there is a sense that for some reason they've decided to announce the men's now.
Yeah, I wonder, does it have anything to do with the Women's World Cup being on this summer?
Yeah.
You know, because even when they released the statement, they were like, the women's team is going nowhere for now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't conclusive. They never said, we're going to continue to put the extra money that we have now from the men's team into the women's team because it's been such a good source of players for the 15s. It's just like, the women are doing maybe slightly better, so they're safe for a little bit longer. You know, there was nothing comprehensive about what they said. It was a bit ominous, really.
Yeah, it is a bit ominous. And it does feel like it's just a waiting game. And I've been talking to some of the women who played on the Seven Series this year, and they're just as annoyed about this decision as the rest of us and as the men's and as the family of the men's. So it does feel like, you know, if they weren't worried, now maybe they are just concerned for the men's because it doesn't, as we've said, it doesn't sit right. But it does feel a little bit like they're probably worried for their own sake as well. I don't know, but yeah, it doesn't feel good. But I do want to play a clip from one of the guys we chatted to today because he had a bit of a different take on the women's game.
The performances have probably been inconsistent as well, but you know, it's like the only way you can get better is by funding it more. It's the same with the women's rugby as well. They don't give that enough funding either. It's very Leinster centric. That's where all the funding goes. So obviously it's disappointing because it's a way of getting more people into 15s as well, because you know it's more fast paced, there's more scoring as well. So,
and would you have watched much sevens before this, or did you kind of just hear about it with all the media around it this week?
No, I've watched a few, especially during the Olympics as well. Like, it was especially the women's sevens was very exciting to watch.
Do you think they say that the sevens program is better for the women's because it gives them more players that can play for the 15s, whereas not the case for the men's?
Kind of. You know, there's a lot of like sevens players for the men's team that like I don't think they'd ever start for Ireland, like probably not even for a provincial club either. I mean, it could be development even for like the like younger players as well. Like, I think sevens is a great way of getting their fitness up, you know, getting them to used to like a more fast-paced kind of game as well. So, you know, maybe that's where the funding should go, like junior sevens and stuff, like maybe more tournaments for like kids as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I do take his point that there is a lot more crossover in the women's game. You've got your likes of Amy Lee. She used to be Murphy Crowe, now she's Amy Lee Costigan. She could play easily on both teams. It's not the same in the men's. There probably isn't anybody on that men's sevens team who could... Well, actually, no, there definitely isn't anybody who could just slot in and start for Ireland in the 15s. But that doesn't take away its benefit as a development platform.
Yeah, I don't think you can compare the two. You know, even the professional side of it with the men's, with the way the clubs are paid compared to the women's, it's not something that I think you should compare black and white because there's so many different things going on the club side of things and the provincial side of things. I mean, how many female players do we have going over playing professionally in England compared to even 5 years ago? You know, there probably wasn't that many compared to how many professionally paid men there are.
Yeah.
So I think it's tricky to compare that and saying none of the men could go on and play for the 15s tomorrow.
It's yeah, but in a argument, couple of years.
Yeah.
And arguably, I don't think the fact that the women's can play for both teams is necessarily a good thing, because it just means that whatever team all the top women are competing for, the other team is at the bottom of the pile. That's the way it's worked for the past couple of years. You know, when the top players decided, or I don't know if they decide or who decides, but they were on the seventh circuit, the women's 15s team weren't performing well and they weren't winning games and they weren't doing as nearly as well as they are now. Now it's a World Cup year, so they've decided the focus is on the 15s. Okay, so the seventh player into the 15s. The women's team were at the bottom, I think they came last or second last on the seventh circuit this year, and they are also relegated. So at least, I mean, I don't know, it's, you can't say that it's bad because we just don't have enough female players in Ireland to fill both, but you wouldn't want that being the case in the men's. You'd rather, I think the women's would rather use it as a development platform than have their players playing across both.
Exactly. I mean, comparing the men's and the women's rugby in this country at the moment is madness, because coming back to my favourite 23-24 financial report from the IRFU.
Which you spent, how long did you spend scrolling through that?
Oh, too long. men's rugby 15s accounts for 80% of the IRFU's revenue. They are focused on that. That is the epitome of professionalism in this country. That's where the money is going. That is where the money is coming in from. That is why these players are going to be at the best of their abilities, at the height of their kind of physical shape and everything. It makes sense that it's much harder to get maybe a sevens player into the men's 15 team. Women's rugby doesn't have, like, 15s and sevens, a fraction of that funding, a fraction of the care that's given to them and the support that's given to them. And that's the same across every sport. You see it in women's soccer. You see it, you know, so many places where you're still trying to develop that game. So comparing it in that way, I just think is losing sight of the fact that there's still so far to go with women's rugby in this country. I mean, am I right in saying that just before some league final for club rugby, is it Bowes against Railway United or something, there was an Irish camp and some players couldn't play in their league final because they had to go to, you know, like timing Irish camps during club matches.
I don't know, but Bowes is definitely not a women's rugby team.
No, it's well, it's something else. It's, no, don't worry.
No,
I know,
I'm just laughing at the mix between football and rugby. But I do vaguely remember that being the case. There's so much overlap between the AIL and Ireland. The level is so slim.
Yeah.
The jump between the two. So, you know, you had players coming out of the top AIL teams and filling in Ireland when players were getting injured because they just don't have the depth. So then the AIL are losing their players. Yeah.
So that, when you comparing it to men's rugby in that way is not... There's no argument there, I believe. And, it, you know, there's a whole different conversation to be had about funding and support for women's rugby. But that doesn't mean you need to gut a men's sevens team.
No. And before we finish, I do just want to jump very briefly onto the comments by David Nisifora yesterday, because I think that has reopened this whole can of worms. And he is basically the former IRFU president, and the sevens was his baby, and he set it up, he supported it. But he came out, it was really weird. Basically, David Barry of BlackRock Expert Services, who was the main financial backer of the Sevens program, according to the RTE, he posted a Facebook post basically saying how disappointed he was with this and also crucially saying he wasn't consulted at all and that he would have been willing to discuss any financial challenges had he been talked to. So, firstly, that's insane because there could have been a financial, you know, solution to this that they didn't even bother exploring. So again, where is this review? And David Nisifora commented on that. He broke his silence. He hasn't said anything. And he said that this was short-sighted nonsense and the, quote, fabricated facts given and the true lack of respect for players, staff, sponsors is an embarrassment to Irish rugby. Those are huge words from a former performance director. And it shows how much the IRFU has changed since he left. Now, I don't know whether this is for good or for bad. I'm sure everyone has different priorities, but there is 100% a different ideology coming from Humphreys, who is now at the top, than there was when Nusafora was at the top. And we'll wait and see whether that will be for the good or the bad of the game. But it is certainly interesting that I don't think this is going... I don't think it's going to be reversed as much as I want it to.
I would love to know, and somebody asked Billy Dardis this at that preference conference, do you think if they'd placed Paris, if they'd won a medal, do you think this would happen?
I think it would have eventually, because as I said, I think it's a Humphreys. I think it's his vision for Irish rugby, and he doesn't see the sevens as a part of that vision. So I think eventually it would have slipped, but I don't think they could have done it as quickly.
Not to bring everything back to Tottenham Hotspur Football Club.
okay, I'm excited to hear this. It's really impressive.
No, it does. It fits in. So basically, we won a trophy last night, but our league form has been horrible this year. So a large portion of fan base and pundits would say we need to sack the manager anyway because we've been so bad in the league. Then we won a big, nice, shiny European trophy. And it's like, okay, keep him on for a while because we've done that. If the men had won an Olympic gold medal, yeah, sevens probably would have lasted maybe a year more. And then they would have found another reason to get rid of it, because if the ideologies are different, if the priorities are different in this kind of new regime, the IRFU, I don't think in the long term would have lasted.
No.
Unfortunately.
We have to wrap it up, but I hope, not even that much from a personal level, because my brother is, you know, nearing on 30. He's coming
so
to the
old. Oh my gosh.
For in rugby, especially in sevens where you're not making a lot of money, that is coming to the end of your career. But for the future players who saw them compete in the Olympics and thought, I could potentially be an Olympian one day, I really hope this program comes back in some shape or form, whether it be under Team Ireland, whether it's just come back in the year of the Olympics. I don't know. We'll wait and see, but I personally hope it does. But for now, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will be back next week with much more Word on the Street.
Go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah,
I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
Oh, no!
Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France, merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants, je vous aime, I love you.